Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we take a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinics, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And she has a new position now, too, if I'm not mistaken. Graduate Program Director?
Yes, actually, it's not new. I've been doing that for about 12 years. Just never stuck it on the the promo thing. Judith asked me what my title was, and I said, well, if you want it all, this is it. But yes, I travel to Utah several times a year to visit my students out there.
Yeah, so you have a graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions. Provo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the first time I've ever announced it.
Yeah, it is. I think we've made history here. Yeah, well, you know how it is that between students and patients, they keep you on your toes.
Well, I tell you what, my daughter is soon to be 8, in fact, on September 1st, and she will be starting third grade. And the amount of material in her backpack last year was amazing, and I'm assuming it's going to be...
It's only going to grow like she will.
Well, just wearing that backpack, are there some things that we should, think about in terms of actually wearing a backpack and handling it?
Well, yeah, there are a number of things. The first thing is, especially as kids get older and books get heavier, is get a rolling backpack. Get one with wheels on those days when things are really heavy and you have a lot of stuff to take back and forth, just get one that they can put on the ground and wheel so that they have an option for that. So that they don't have to wear it on their back all the time. And then there are recommendations regarding weight limits on backpacks for kids. 15% of body weight? Does that sound right?
That's the target.
10 to 15% of body weight. So set the backpack on the scale, set your kid on the scale, do the math. That's your homework. And if you can't figure it out, ask your third grader to do it.
I'm doing it in my head right now, and I'm coming up with a percentage that's much higher than 15% for her.
But. Yeah.
I'm sure it is for lots of kids, I would think it would exceed that.
It is. And, they're running to the bus like my kids are. They run. Here comes the bus. We got to get out the door. And they fling it over one shoulder.
Yeah.
So they're not wearing it correctly on their back as is. So, and if they have to walk a long distance or any distance to school, again, the rolling works. In the wintertime, maybe you can't do that. You can look for a backpack that also has a waist strap, if you have one of those, to offload some of the weight from their shoulders and set it on their hips.
That makes a huge difference, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Well, Sue in La Crosse has a question for you, so we will go right to Sue. Thank you for calling, Sue. Hello.
Hi. I had an injury, it'll be 2 weeks ago Thursday. I was in a boat and hit my chest on the steering wheel. In real high impact, it was with a wave. And I had a life jacket on, so that protected me a little bit. And I've still been participating in all my usual activities, but it's right in the center of my chest, like my sternum. And I know that's what it is. How long does that take to heal, or is there anything that I can do to get it to heal faster?
How is it bothering you now? Does it hurt only to touch? Does it hurt when you breathe? Does it hurt when you move your arms?
It hurts a little bit to touch right in the middle, and mostly more with like sedentary stuff. I've still been biking. We were actually on vacation. I did some paddling. So I haven't rested it at all. I guess I notice it at night than when I go to bed, probably because I've been active.
Right, exactly.
It responds really well to ibuprofen.
Okay.
And it seems to feel better then.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it getting better, worse, or staying the same?
Staying the same. It hasn't gotten any better. In fact, sometimes it's worse, maybe just related to activity. I don't know.
Could be activity related, yeah.
Wondering how long it takes. It's kind of a different place to heal, and it doesn't really stretch out very well. I don't know.
Yeah. Can you stretch it? Do you feel it if you bring your arms back? Do you feel that?
That doesn't hurt.
Okay. So then it probably isn't related to the muscle or any of the muscle attachments there. It's probably a bone bruise itself. And right where your ribs attach, there are little joints. So you could have damaged or sprained some of those joints. You know, and those can take a while to heal. The good thing is it's not a weight-bearing joint, although secondarily when you're biking, weight-bearing on your hands is somewhat. But, you know, I would expect that it's going to take a good 6 weeks to start to feel better, and it's going to depend upon your activity level. So if you are highly active, it's going to take a little bit longer. If you can back off on the things that annoy it, then it might get better a little bit faster. But, you know, I'd stick with the ibuprofen as you need. I maybe put some ice on the area, you know, a little ice cup and ice massage around there, especially after you've been very active. I'd work on some deep breathing exercises, some diaphragmatic breathing to make sure you're opening up your chest and that you're maintaining good mobility throughout your rib cage. Maybe some rib cage stretching. And, you know, if you're not turning the corner in a few weeks, go in and have it looked at.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. So it sounds like you're doing most activities, even though you're paying the price at the end of the day. And I'm not recommending that you do this, but I've had a few people that have had pretty intense pain when they're using their arms or they can't sleep on their side, of getting a rib binder, even though you don't have a rib problem. And for somebody who has a cracked rib, you know, you get this kind of elastic Velcro band, and you put it around the lower rib cage. You don't put it up around your chest and sternal area. That would be too uncomfortable. But down lower in the lower ribs, it just keeps that sternum from moving quite as much. It adds a little bit of external support.
So maybe wear that when you're doing activities?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying,
physical
Bill?
Activities.
Okay.
And using the arms in particular.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Sue. Appreciate your call. Mary in Eau Claire, we are on to you. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was, I'm a runner, not long distance, but 2-3 miles. And I was running yesterday, and I tripped on something and lost my balance. And I just about regained it, but I couldn't quite stay up. So I kind of slid onto my butt, but then my leg went sideways and hit the ground, or hit something on the ground. So the inside of my left knee got bruised. And I'm just wondering what's the best thing to do for that, if I should get one of those pain-relieving creams. I've wrapped it. I do icing on it when I can, but it's kind of painful when I walk.
Is there any swelling, Mary?
Just a slight amount of swelling in there.
Right in the area where you hit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
it's
you
like
see
a big bruise.
Then you see a big bruise.
Well,
yeah.
I don't even see the bruise.
Okay.
Okay. It's a little discolored, but
okay.
Not much.
Well, I'd stick with the icing. And are you able to walk normally on it?
Pretty much. I have to baby it just a little bit. It's pretty, you know, sore, especially if I kind of twist or turn one way or the other. So
okay.
I have to be careful about
okay.
it.
All right. Well, I would stick with the icing, and I would get up and move around and walk and do as many of your normal daily activities as you can. Did you say you were wrapping it?
Yeah, yep. I've got it wrapped now.
Okay.
It seems to be better
yes.
When I keep moving, too. It
yes.
doesn't stiffen up.
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, probably the biggest issue is if when you hit it, if you stir it up a little bit of your underlying arthritis that may already be there, especially on the mm-hmm. inside of your knee, that's one of the places where it tends to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a little bit of swelling and some soreness there and you have to baby it, you know, I'm thinking that you may have stirred some of that up a little bit. So
yeah,
if you take good care of it, the icing it, the wrapping, getting up and moving and gradually working your way back into activity, you're probably in pretty good shape. You can also
yeah.
try doing some leg raises, just kind of lying on your back
mm-hmm.
With your opposite knee bent, then tighten your thigh muscle and lift your leg up about 45 mm-hmm. degrees or so, then lower it back down and relax. That can help build up some of the strength in your leg muscles.
Yeah, I do that every morning, but I couldn't this morning because it hurt too much.
Right,
but,
right, right.
But do you think that I probably should refrain from running for a little while?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a race coming up in 2 weeks, and I'm hoping I can get this kind of tamed down by that time.
Yep. Yep. Walking, then going back to a walk-jog program as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But you should be able to do a leg raise without pain okay. before you can go back to jogging.
Okay.
There you go.
And what about those topical creams or pain relievers? Will that at least relieve some of the pain? Or?
It they might. You can go ahead and give them a try.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks very much, Mary, for calling. You can join in, too, as we visit with Bill and Lori at 1-800-642-1234. If you've got an ache or a pain that you want to talk about, or maybe another kind of comment relating to good health, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We do have a Facebook question from back. What can be done to help rehabilitate runner's knee or chondromalacia patella?
Mm-hmm.
I already dealt with the cause by getting my sports orthotics bumped back up and getting new running shoes, been using the RICE routine, rest, ice, compression, and elevation, along with acupuncture.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like Beck has dealt with this before because he kind of knew what the cause was and how to get back into it. Chondromalacia is the technical term for arthritis underneath your kneecap. You know, depending upon his age and how long he's been running, he may or may not have actual arthritis under his kneecap. He could just have an aggravated kneecap. We call that patellofemoral stress syndrome, and it's a fairly common problem in many athletes. One of the things that we look at in terms of managing this in the long run is improving core strength. There's been a lot of research recently on the importance of hip strength in controlling the lower extremity biomechanics to optimize alignment and joint reaction forces at the kneecap. So if he hasn't been examined and evaluated for his hip strength and some of his biomechanics in his lower extremity, and it sounds like he does have some biomechanical issues because he has orthotics, it'll probably be in his best interest to see a physical therapist for a visit or two to be instructed in some very specific strengthening exercises to help improve his dynamic alignment in the lower extremity.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Usually when you think somebody has a knee problem, all the focus is at the knee, and gives a good example. Orthotics can be critical to help somebody recover from this condition and keep it from coming back, but then looking above the knee. And that's what the rehab program should be doing, is not just looking at the joint where the pain is, but looking above and below and what may be a contributing factor to this condition, why it started in the first place, and then, of course, that'll keep it from coming back again.
Let's go to Diane in Mercer next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm also a runner, and I've been getting these little calluses in the middle of the front of my foot, and I looked it up, and it looks like they're metatarsal arch calluses. And I go to a chiropractor, and she said that my arch there has fallen, and I really don't have any pain on the area, and I'm wondering if I should do something about it. I do take a stone and rub them down so that they don't bother me when I'm running.
Are they calluses all the way across that arch or just under one or two of the toes?
It's just really small, and it's almost between my big toe and the first little toe, and it's very small.
Okay.
But it hurts if I don't rub them down.
Okay.
Like a pea in my shoe.
Oh, yeah. The pea in your shoe.
Yeah.
The stone in your shoe. Okay. And how long has it been there?
I know my physician's assistant cut it off one time for me, so
okay.
about a year ago.
Okay.
And, been there.
And does it hurt with any of your shoes?
No.
Doesn't hurt at all?
That's when I'm running and towards the end of the run.
And when towards the end of the run. Okay. Well, you may think about getting a metatarsal support. If you go to a drugstore or to any of the foot specialty stores, they sell metatarsal support pads. And you can try one of those in your shoe and see if giving your metatarsal arch a little bit of support, if that helps with that. For some people, the metatarsal pain and that kind of wear and tear is very specific to one or two pairs of shoes and the specific shoe style.
Uh-huh.
So you know, if this is relatively recent in the last couple of years and you consistently wear the same kind of running shoes, you may think about a different style of running shoe that may affect the mechanics of your foot a little bit differently mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have changed recently from Asics to mm-hmm. Nike, and it didn't. It's still there.
Okay.
But maybe they still are the same style.
Could be the same style.
Yeah, in terms of the makeup of the shoe. And, you know, Diane, if that pad doesn't work, and it makes sense that's the best place to start. If that doesn't work, then having somebody do a biomechanical assessment of your foot and ankle, maybe orthotics may help you and minimize the load that's coming through that part of your bottom of your foot. And so there could be an issue with your rear foot that's impacting up by your toes. But if you do go in and see somebody, make sure you're bringing your running shoes with you so they can look at the shoes and then look at your feet and see what else may need to be added.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests here. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll tune in to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio tomorrow night at 8 for special election coverage of recalls around the state. That's election night coverage tomorrow at 8 p.m. on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking aches and pains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Thank you for listening in. One open line at 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page and post a question there at The Larry Mueller Show, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Dino in Madison up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. How's everyone doing?
Great.
Doing great. Well.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Very beautiful in Madison. The question I had was, I had a partial meniscectomy of my medial collateral meniscus, or my medial meniscus. And I'm itching to get back on the softball diamond and wanted to know if I'm pain-free, it's basically just 3 weeks after the surgery, can I go ahead and just do that?
Well, that's a really good question. How did you injure your meniscus?
Playing softball.
I did the same thing. I did the same thing, Dino.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was scoring the winning run.
Yeah, exactly. And how much of your meniscus did they take out?
It was about 25%, just the interior on the medial side of my right knee.
Okay, and nothing else was damaged? Did they tell you what your joint surfaces look like?
Yeah, joint surfaces looked okay, just a little bit of arthritis from old football playing days.
Okay.
But otherwise looked to be really healthy.
Okay, all right. And may I ask your age?
36.
Okay, all right. Well, just over the cusp. There's research that shows that once you have a meniscectomy after the age of 35, the arthritis accelerates much more rapidly than if you're less than 35. There's something about that threshold age where there's a change in your connective tissue. So can you go back to it? Yeah, I would do some rehab first, though. I would make sure I had full motion. I would make sure that I had good strength in my quadriceps and good core strength, because what's going to protect that knee in the long run is your muscle's ability to absorb shock so that that load is not transferred onto your joint surface. And have you tried running on it at all?
Well, actually, my orthopedist, the orthopedic surgeon, he told me never to run ever again.
No,
just because of the risk of arthritis in joint surfaces, repeated pounding. So he recommended a bike, elliptical.
So, does running include baseball, softball?
No, he said that I could play softball, but just no long distance running.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd say you could go with that.
What position do you play, by the way?
Catcher, second base.
Ooh.
Usually in the outfield.
Ooh.
Yeah. So. Catcher. We're grimacing.
Yeah,
at the catcher
exactly.
Part.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ever considered first base?
Yeah, exactly. Or the out. Well, yeah. The issue with catching is that when you're down in that squat position, that places the most load on your meniscus.
Okay.
That and the fully extended position. So those two positions really put a lot of pressure on it. Your joint surfaces don't like to have a lot of compressive forces on them for a long period of time. So if you were going into a squat and coming back out, it wouldn't be so bad. But when you're in a continuous squat, that's really tough on your joint surfaces.
Are you slow pitch or fast pitch?
We are unlimited arc slow pitch.
All right, you're
not in a deep squat. Right.
Yeah, usually not.
Okay, all right.
Sister's having a tough game. I'm trying to give him a target. I'm down, but
okay, all right.
Otherwise,
yeah.
You know, I think it sounds like there's a balance between counterbalancing the long term effects of increasing arthritis and trying to recapture my glory of my youth.
Great. Would you like to come and occupy the third chair here? That was very well said. Yeah. You're exactly right. And that's kind of why we're all hemming and hawing a little bit. We want to let you go back and say, go do it. But you really need to understand that there are long-term risks. And in the big picture, you want to have that knee for a long time. So, go back and play, but don't go crazy.
Thank you very much.
I think this is where a physical therapist can help somebody return to activity. Like our previous caller, when does Mary start running again, or Diane start running again? And it's a good question. The season, I'm sure, is ticking. It's coming down to a close. But baseball is a little different than jogging. You're starting and stopping, and you're cutting and you're twisting, and just to make sure that that knee is ready. And that ties into the core strengthening. So both short-term and long-term goals are met.
And honestly, there's that question of long distance versus the short distance. The long distance, the repetitive pounding on pavement, yes, I understand that. But honestly, in terms of joint loading, the faster running places higher peak loads on your joint than long, slow distance does. So, there's good and bad about each of them.
Mine tore rounding second. Yeah. On my way to third for a triple.
I remember that.
Cut hard and...
Yep.
So keep that in mind, Dino.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind is when you lose 25% of your meniscus, your knee's going to feel a little bit wobblier than it did before because you don't have as much congruency.
Right.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. We turn to Sylvester in Stoughton next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello there. You answered quite a few of my questions in there, but I have a Baker's cyst behind my knee, and I also still have the chondromalacia. It started with that, and then it went to the Baker's cyst, and then I'm slightly bow-legged also. And I've been getting these injections of this, like, rooster chrome hyaluronic acid-type material underneath my kneecap because I don't have a lot of cushion. Actually, I have not a lot of cartilage underneath my kneecap, and I'm wondering if I could get rid of this Baker's cyst, maybe I could run a little bit better. But the more I run, the more it swells up, so I just haven't been running much.
Well, the Baker's cyst is kind of like a bubble in a tire. Your joint capsule has a weak spot in it, so when you get some swelling or extra fluid production in your knee, it tends to pouch out that Baker's cyst in the back. So it's a bit of a harbinger of about how much load you've placed on your joint. So when you overload it, that thing bothers you a little bit more and sticks out a little bit more. When your joint loading is kind of within the joint's tolerance, then the fluid goes back down some and you don't have the cyst or it's not as prominent. So it kind of tells you whether you're overloading your knee or not. Yeah. The hyaluronic acid injections seem like the right thing. Are you in therapy at all?
Yeah, I had a lot of physical therapy on my knees, and whenever anything kind of is not right, I go to get that done, but it doesn't really seem to, do much to it. I'm not a young guy anymore, so maybe part of age.
Yeah. Have you thought about exercising in a pool?
I started swimming about a month ago, so that has made a big difference.
Okay.
So, yeah, no All more right. running, I guess.
And
yeah.
Lori, correct if I'm wrong, but usually Baker's cyst, it's not often associated with patellofemoral joint, chondromalacia.
No. My guess is that if he has chondromalacia underneath his kneecap, he probably has tibiofemoral arthritis as well, and that's where that's coming from.
So, Sylvester, that probably explains why. It's probably more than just underneath your kneecap that you have issues with your knee, and you mentioned being bow-legged and what that can do to the joint surfaces or meniscus. But certainly spending more time in the pool or being involved with aerobic activities that doesn't include the pounding. It doesn't mean you can't ever run. Yeah. But, running 5, 6, 7 days a week is probably not in your knee's best interest.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Carol in Oconomowoc next. Carol, hi to you.
Hello. I have a question. I'm not a hardcore athlete or anything, but I do a lot of walking, and I'm over 50, and my knees just crunch a lot. Anyways, I heard you talking earlier about core strengthening as being very good for preserving the knees. I do have a lot of aches and pains in my knees. I am a pretty avid downhill skier. And I wanted to get a balance board, you know, those boards that sit on that cylinder. What's a good at-home core strengthening exercise for strengthening the muscles that you need to help your knees out?
Well, using a balance board can be part of the program, but core stabilization, they go way beyond doing sit-ups. You know, for decades, we did sit-ups to strengthen our abdominals, to help our back, and what the research has shown is we need to do a lot different kinds of exercise than doing sit-ups. So there's a lot of floor exercises that you're on your hands and knees, you're on your back, you're on your stomach, on your sides. And then as you gain strength, then you progress to using equipment like a balance board or a physio ball, which really is just a round balance board that you can do things sitting on or lying on top of. So there's usually a progression in using a balance board comes a little bit later on down the road as you start gaining better trunk control. There are dozens and dozens of exercises that are out there. The key is where should you start? And again, this is where I think a physical therapist can help you with really just a visit or two to kind of see what are your abilities at this point in time, what would be good equipment for you to use at this point in time. And then we spend a lot of time teaching people how to progress the exercises. And usually I have people come back, 6 weeks, 8 weeks later to have their program updated.
Okay.
But there's a progression to make sure that you're really getting the benefit that you want to get from this. And it's really a good idea to help protect your knees. This should be one of the strategies.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. We have an email question from Gail in Oshkosh. I have saddle bone deformity on both feet. Walking with or without shoes is uncomfortable. Would physical therapy provide any benefits, or is surgery and or orthotics the only answer? Lori?
The saddle bone deformity is a deformity that happens in your midfoot as a result of hypermobility between a couple of the bones in your foot. Physical therapists do treat hypermobility in various parts of the body. In the foot, an orthotic would be the primary intervention for that hypermobility. We don't really have exercises designed for hypermobility in the foot. We do in the shoulder and the spine and stuff, but not so much the foot. Where a physical therapist might help in this kind of situation is with walking gait, with mechanics, with help elsewhere along the kinetic chain at the knee, the hip, and the low back to make sure that this deformity that's happening in the foot and being treated probably via other interventions doesn't affect their gait and cause secondary problems. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing that's where a physical therapist might come in this kind of a case. But physical therapy isn't going to be the primary treatment.
So an orthotic or a shoe, a special shoe?
Well, an orthotic usually to help provide support for the instability.
Okay.
So if you think about your arch and think about your arch collapsing, that would be an example of an instability in your foot. So usually some sort of a static structure helps with that.
Michael in West Bend, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I was in the military for a while, and I was doing a lot of running with those military boots on all sorts of services. And once I got out, I switched over to normal running shoes. I've been running for quite a while, doing some marathons, a couple other races, and I had a lot of pain in my knees and my lower back. So recently I switched over to these five-fingered, minimally supported running shoes, the more natural style of running shoes, and also running barefoot. I was wondering what your opinion was on these five-fingered shoes or running barefoot in general.
Well, how did you do? That's the question.
Well, it has helped. My knees and my lower back have been feeling a little bit better, but this was a very, very recent switch, just about a week ago. Mm-hmm. So I was curious if you were aware of any long-term problems I should watch out for or any future things I should prepare myself for.
Well, those are great questions. The issue is that these things haven't been around long enough to have any long-term follow-up. I mean, you know, the five-finger shoes have been out, you know, a couple of years. The whole barefoot running movement is in its infancy yet, and we're still waiting to see what the long-term is going to be. You know, in physical therapy, we've had this philosophy of support and the current state of our society where everything's pavement. We spend a lot of time in bad shoes, that we should have support for our feet because we're not on grass anymore. That being said, I'm seeing some transition and shift to a theory of maybe starting that kind of support in our children as young as we have hasn't given them sufficient time or possibility to strengthen their feet. So I expect that we're not dealing with a homogenous population and that there will be subgroups of people who do well barefoot running and with the five-fingered shoes, and there will be subsets of people who it sends them to us and the chiropractor. So I think it's a matter of finding the right match for you, whether it's barefoot, a five-fingered shoe, a shoe with rear foot stability, a shoe with a lot of cushion, a shoe with a straight last, a shoe with a curve last. I think it's a matter of matching the individual to the type of shoe.
And then also then transitioning. I think where people are more likely to get into trouble is, you know, you've been wearing a certain type of running shoe for years and years, and then you abruptly stop and you maintain the same level and intensity of running. So your body doesn't get a chance to adapt or compensate to the changes. Mm-hmm. And so I think people probably have a better chance of success if they transition, you know, from one mode of running to the next. And then you listen to the joints of your feet and knees on up, and they'll tell you whether this is a good thing or not.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you.
You bet.
Facebook question from Kathy. I'm a racquetball player diagnosed with facet syndrome in the sacrum area. Any ideas for pain reduction and overall correction?
Well, facet joints, we have facet joints in our spine. There's two on each side of our spine, and they tend to get irritated with when we arch our back, and especially when you combine that with twisting, which, okay, of course, happens at times during racquetball.
Sure.
And so those are the motions that you need to have a lot of flexibility into to do well. There's a number of things that you can do to decrease the pressure in the facet joints, and one is good hip flexor or quadriceps flexibility, so muscles in the front of the hips to really stretch out, and then core strengthening to help minimize the load on those joints. If the pain has been persistent more than 4 to 6 weeks, if the pain is starting to move down into her leg, then seeing a physical therapist who can examine her and develop a good program for her would be recommended if she wants to keep playing at that level.
On to Holly in Rib Lake. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I have a pain, and he's my husband.
Yeah. We won't go there on that one, Holly.
Back in April, he had an errant calf pull him off his feet, and he came down in the manger on his right shoulder, neck, and cracked the back of his head, and you could see his eyeballs turn white. I happened to walk in at that time. Well, I did bully him into the doctor, and he did say that, you know, there was no rotator cuff that he could see, and that he probably had a concussion, and that he was probably deeply bruised or maybe a slight tear, and it would take a while. That's been April, and the pain part is I have to deal with watching him. He's in misery all over her, so he says. Should he go to a massage therapist or deep tissue therapy or chiropractor or what?
Wow, so
he's got knots in his shoulder, like, you know, that are really bad when I rub, but he's, you know, he's a farmer, so, you know, he's stacking hay bales, he's doing range of therapy,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exercises like they told, but, you know, Is he doing too much?
So so he went and so he got some exercises from the doctor?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You know, he should go in and see a physical therapist and get a specific program for his shoulder. Chances are not, it's been several months, and he's changed how he does things. He's modified things so that he can get his work done. He's probably moving with some faulty movement patterns that are contributing to continued problems. Because of the way he landed and hit his head, he needs to have his cervical spine examined and that ruled out as an additional source of pain. And again, now that it's been several months, it's going to be really hard to tease out what came first and what came second. But he needs to get in and have a good examination and get on the right program for him. Could include some cervical traction, could include modifying his exercises. It could be include teaching him ways to get his farm work done without aggravating his shoulder.
Right. And
there's a lot of fronts we could address for him.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah. See if you can wrestle him into the clinic, huh?
Okay. All right. Let's go to Sandy in Minocqua next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an avid gardener, and I do a lot of lifting and heavy exercise. And last May, I developed a problem with my sciatic nerve. And my doctor put me on prednisone, and that helped for a little bit. But it's just been keeping on and on and on. Now, several years ago, I had a similar situation. I went to a chiropractor, and that helped me a great deal, but a lot of people are telling me now, if you've got arthritis in your back, you shouldn't go to a chiropractor. I do have quite a bit of arthritis in my back. And is this my first question? That's my first question. Is this valid advice that I should not go to a chiropractor because I have arthritis in my back?
No, I don't think so. You know, I've worked with people who have gone to a chiropractor who've had arthritic changes in their back or their hip and have had good success. And, you know, I think where you want to be careful in terms of receiving adjustments or manipulation that a number of practitioners do is you don't want an underlying problem where you have too much movement or hypermobility. We had a call earlier or an email earlier today where the issue was too much movement. You know, in those joints you want to protect. You don't want to have them manipulated. So arthritis by itself doesn't really contraindicate much of anything. There are a lot of folks with pretty significant arthritis and have minimal pain and do all kinds of activities. If your arthritis is causing your sciatica, that means you have some bone spurs. Otherwise, arthritis by itself wouldn't give you sciatica. You'd have back pain, but not sciatica, nerve pain down into your leg. So the question is, what's causing the nerve pain? That's really the bigger question to me than anything else. And if it is arthritic changes in osteophytes, then you need traction and some education of how to lift and how to bend to protect that area. And you also need really good hip flexibility. So when you do bend, more bending happens at your hip and less in your back. If you have a disc problem or a disc bulge or herniation, then we treat that a little differently in terms of how to get the pain up out of your leg. So in terms of your comfort level, if you've been to a chiropractor in the past and it's worked and it's convenient, then that's where I would start. And I would assume that they would tell you if they can't help you. So that's how I would respond to your question, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you have also answered my second question.
Thank you, Sandy.
So two for one.
Oh, my.
Thank you very much for calling. And more callers online. You could join us at 1-800-642-1234 as we visit with Bill Boisenault from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinic. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer for the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Heidi in Watertown has a question for you, too. Let's go there. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I am going into my 27th week of pregnancy. It's my third baby. And I've I have a lot of back pain this time around, and I'm kind of miserable. And I'm a lot bigger this time. I don't know if it's just because it's my third baby or I don't know. But it's middle back pain, and the only relief I really can find is if I just lay down on my side, and I have to do that several times a day just to get relief, and I try to stretch it, but I'm so big already, it's kind of hard to stretch. And so I'm going to see a massage therapist on Wednesday, but I'm just wondering if there's anything else I can do, just because that's going to get expensive quickly. I was thinking maybe going to sports medicine and just seeing if there's something going on or if this is just the way it goes. So any suggestions that you have would be great.
Yeah, no, glad you called. And I would not assume this is just the way it goes, because you have a ways to go yet during the pregnancy here. And, and you know, there are a number of options. There are some supports that sometimes are needed during pregnancy to take some of the pressure off the back. There are some limitations in terms of exercise. You reach a point where you have to be very careful how you try to strengthen your abdominals based on how your abdomen is changing. There's also some safe ways to gently self-mobilize that mid part of the back, which can be difficult to get to no matter where you are during the pregnancy. And sometimes the underlying problem is that some joints move too much, or there's hypermobility due to ligamentous laxity. So protecting the joints is really important. Going to a massage therapist is certainly an option for you if they can get the muscles to relax. The question is, will they give you more than just short-term relief in terms of what else might need to be changed besides just getting the muscles to relax?
Right.
And that's where I think a physical therapist who works with women who are pregnant could be your best option. And you know, they can also do some massage, or they can link you with a massage therapist in addition to whatever they teach you to do on your own as well.
And I looked up some back braces online. It seems like a lot of them are focused more on the lower back. So I mean, I'll keep looking for that as well. But the thing that is interesting about this time around is I have noticed my abdominal muscles have split, and they didn't do that with the first two. So I don't know if that has something to do with it, because I've had to be, you know, alter all of my workouts so that I can't, you know, I can't do any core exercises. And I don't know if that just automatically changed things in my back.
Well, it could. It's called a diastasis, where there is separation of the abdominals. And again, you can make that worse by trying to strengthen your abdominals in the traditional way. And there are some things that may help you. I mean, most likely that will resolve after you deliver the baby, but you certainly don't want that to get any worse than it is. And there are some things you can do to help protect that area.
Yeah, and in terms of the brace, I understand that most of them are for your low back, but honestly, if you use that and help support the baby, it may take some of the load off of your mid-back. Your mid-back may be overworking, trying to compensate and assist your low back with the increasing load. So putting on the low back support may actually help your mid-back.
Yeah, and it's usually fine when I'm standing. It's when I sit. It's like I can't.
Yeah.
My posture, like, I'm not strong enough to hold the posture. So maybe that would be a
And there's thing. There's wonderful core strengthening that you can do in a pool. Even in the presence of the diastasis recti. And the buoyancy of the water will help support the, you know, the large mass in front so that your back isn't having to work so hard to hold that up.
That's actually, can I ask you just one other quick question about that? I actually have been swimming, and I know when you're pregnant, you're not supposed to lay on your back at all, because it affects circulation. So is it okay to swim on your back?
It is okay to swim on your back because because of the buoyancy of the water and how it lifts the baby, it's fine to swim on your back.
Oh, wonderful. I was wondering that. So. Okay, well, thank you for all your suggestions.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had a caller who couldn't stay online wondering why her toes cramp up when she's riding her bicycle.
Well, typically it's either a neuro or a vascular problem. Sometimes it's because your shoes are too tight. Sometimes it's if people are wearing those compressive socks on their legs, it could be too much compression there. It could be you keep going all the way up the chain. It could be coming from where she's sitting. So from mm-hmm. sitting on the seat and getting some neurovascular compromise there. Most of the time it comes from your feet, and you just have to get off.
Position of the feet on the pedal, maybe?
The feet and the shoes, the pressure of the shoes on some of the circulatory vasculature as it comes in through around your ankle and into your foot, down into your toes. You know, for people who are working hard and it's hot outside, you get a redistribution of blood flow to your working muscles and then to your core to try to get rid of heat, so it pulls it from your feet. So because your feet, you don't need your feet so much. So they tend to cramp up. So, you know, sometimes you have to stop and get off your bike, take off your shoes, stretch your feet.
Yeah. The footwear would be the best place to start. Just to try to don't lace them up quite so tight and see if that makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. An email from Sue wondered if you two could address the issue of general muscle soreness, specifically delayed onset muscle soreness. After a particularly vigorous exercise class last Friday, really sore on Saturday and Sunday, less sore today. What to do when this happens in regards to immediate short-term treatment and when to go back for more, albeit less intense activity?
Delayed onset muscle soreness as a result of the negative or eccentric contractions, things where you lower a weight or lower your body. They can be great exercises for building up your strength. There's no long-term negative effects to those. Delayed onset muscle soreness usually comes on in 24 to 48 hours, lasts 4 to 7 days. Again, no long-term effects. There's some studies that show a little bit of stretching gives you some short-term relief. There's some research that shows that vitamin C is helpful. There isn't any kind of substantial body of literature that suggests that anything other than time will make it go away. And you can go back really whenever you feel like you can exercise safely without hurting yourself. So sometimes the issue is you hurt so much that you can't execute an exercise correctly, and that puts you at risk of injury. But it's most of the time after this, when you get yourself warmed up again, you don't hurt anymore. Yeah. So you really can go back to vigorous activity when you feel up to it.
Sue in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have a question regarding those new shoes, and I can't think of the name of them, but they're like rocking, kind of the rocking motion where most of the rubber is right in the middle of the foot rather than the front and the back. And they're supposed to tone your legs better and so forth and so on. Do they really, or are there any kind of issues with wearing them for an extended period of time?
Bill, what do you think?
Well, I think the big issue, and this ties into a previous caller about, you know, running barefoot or, you know, changing a different style running shoe, is there is some merit to wearing them, and muscles that are being asked to work harder, so you can get more strengthening of certain muscle groups. But you want to transition. If you stick with your normal walking pattern, normal walking intensity, and you change footwear that dramatically, you're going to be sore and develop some secondary tightness in that area. So are they good for you? They're probably not going to cause harm as long as you transition slowly and steadily into increasing the amount of walking you're doing in them. The thing you have to be careful of with overstrengthening is you can develop tightness. And you can develop tightness in your heel core that can impact not only your foot and ankle, but also your knee. So, again, some balance with if you can do something to strengthen to make sure you maintain your flexibility, again, will give you the best outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, how would they be for sciatic nerve issues? Because I do have that, and I was just wondering if it's going to aggravate it or make it better.
It could aggravate it potentially. Again, it depends on what's causing the sciatica. You know, could it be a bulging disc problem? Could it be a bone spur? You know, for certain conditions, more flexion in your back will worsen the sciatica. Other conditions, more arching of your back will aggravate sciatica. So it depends on what's causing the pressure on that nerve. Mm-hmm. But potentially, yes, it could make it worse.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Email from Jennifer in Madison. I've retired this year at the age of 63, and for the past half year, I've been enjoying my new computer for hours on end. Gone are the two-mile walks. Gone are the moderate housework exercises, to the great dismay of my husband. And gone is most incentive to get up and out. I need to ease into regular exercise. It's almost as if I'm afraid to start biking, walking daily, and enjoying the outdoors. Could you please help me with how to get started?
What a great question. Get up, go. I don't know. For husband likes to do those things, it might be something they can plan to do together. Get up and go for a walk on the weekend or at the end of the day or after dinner or after your morning coffee or whatever. But people who are successful exercisers make it a priority. So when they get up in the morning, they lay out their day and they schedule the rest of their day around their exercise. The most successful regular exercisers are those who exercise in the morning. So for someone who is retired and you don't have to get to work at a certain time, getting up and exercising first thing in the morning is in our best interest. Walking is a very simple, easy thing to do. Go bird watching, go, you know, looking at the leaf colors, whatever it takes to get yourself up and going. If you're still at a loss, get yourself a personal trainer. Or ask for it for your next birthday, someone who's gonna hold your feet
to the
fire. Hold you accountable.
Or a friend or, Jim Packard, who retired, he exercises with his brother. And so the two of them, you're sort of, maybe she's got a next-door neighbor or something if the husband's still working.
That could really help. Lori's right, getting into the routine. And it's much more difficult to get into routine and fall out of one. And that's the trick. And so partnering with another person or people or small groups periodically can help you kind of get back in the mode.
Yeah, I know there are a number of groups. For example, the pool, there are some exercise classes in the pool. And once a month after class, they go out and have lunch. So it's a great support group, too.
Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault are guests today as we talk with them about aches and pains and how to deal with them. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne-Brody, UW physical therapist. Great to have them with us today. Certainly, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along. Reed in West Salem has a question for you, too, so I'm going to go right to Reed. Hi there, Reed. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Lori and Bill. I took a fall right on my right kneecap, flat on it, January 2nd, and it turned out that I bruised all the way down my calf and had foot involvement. I didn't notice falling on the foot at all, but afterward, I noticed that my right foot was considerably flattened. I finally got a referral to the podiatrist who put some orthotics under me, and that seemed to help. I had an ongoing feeling on the sole of my foot that my foot was the bottom of my foot was asleep, but at the same time, I was getting a hypersensitivity if I stepped on anything, and I had virtually no ability to flex my right toes. Now, some of the flexion has come back since I had the orthotics on under me. I have had an MRI because the podiatrist thought perhaps I had torn or injured my flexor tendon. He said that's an extremely rare injury. But it turns out that the MRI shows no damage anywhere. He thought maybe something maybe just could have been hung up and maybe freed up eventually, but he says he could see no damage on the MRI. I'm just wondering, he has offered to send me to some therapy to see if I can't regain a little more use of it, but the tingling is just, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I bet it is. Bill, what do you think?
So, Reed, the MRI was of your foot, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, what you described is, you're right, it's very unusual for when you fall on your kneecap, a local bruised kneecap, to cause the symptoms that you just described. And so the assumption would be that there was some tissue damage extending down to your calf and foot area. The pins and needles, I mean, is that getting worse or is that getting better?
It has pretty much remained the same since January.
Okay. All right. Well, with the pins and needles and the cramping, again, you think about nerve tissue, and there are nerves that cross through the knee area that innervate down to the foot and the ankle. Any back pain with this?
No. No, okay. I've had previous back pain, previous back surgery, and nothing more involved there.
Okay. All right. I would also think if you tore a tendon, certainly that would cause pain, but it shouldn't be causing the pins and needles that you're describing. I think a visit to a physical therapist to have them examine you, to give your input, but having said that, I would think a good orthopedic examination, looking at your knee, your hip, and foot and the ankle, and kind of looking beyond the foot as the source of the tingling in particular, would probably be prudent for you. You're looking at 7-8 months here that, again, tissue healing time is way beyond what it normally would be for a stretch injury or a bruise. So it's an unusual set of complaints for, again, especially a kneecap bruise or, falling on your knee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly seems like there's been a nerve that's damaged somewhere. I mean, given the toe weakness that you have, given the numbness and tingling, those things are not consistent with a knee contusion. So like Bill, the first thing I thought of was that when you fell, you also did something in your back, and that something's coming from your back. And that's still a possibility, even in the absence of back pain, or that there was some local nerve damage somewhere in your knee or calf that's perpetuating this. But somebody has to get to the bottom here and figure out what the source of this is.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Laura in Kenosha County, we turn to you. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm calling because I've had neck pain now for several months, and it started out as what I thought was just a sore neck. I do durability driving, which means I drive off the road type vehicles with a helmet on my head, and I'm 60, and I'm thinking I might have injured my neck, and I don't know how to tell who to go to. Basically it feels like a headache in the neck on the left side, and it's just not going away.
Okay.
Okay. So, Laura, it doesn't sound like there was one particular injury or one day when on suddenly.
Not that I remember any special. It's just, my neck was sore, and I figured, it's going to go away. It'll be
sure.
Fine.
Sure, right, because we all have neck soreness once in a while. Any pain moving down into your arms?
Not into the arms. I have about a month after that started, a month and a half, my legs started to cramp up real bad, and I don't know if it's related or anything. I get feelings of, movement in my legs, at night when I'm relaxing, and but I do wear a helmet, and let's see, I've got some notes here, especially the right leg, but the pain is on the left side of the neck.
Right. Any numbness or tingling along with this in your arms, hands, or feet?
No.
Okay, so more this restless leg or leg cramping?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if the leg symptoms are related or not. It's possible that it could be. I guess what I would recommend is seeing your physician. And they can examine your neck. They can check your legs for circulation. They can do a neurological screening as well. If you didn't have the leg cramping, I would recommend you go see a physical therapist who could examine your neck and talk about your driving and the helmet. But with the leg symptoms combined with it, I think your physician would be a good place to start.
Yeah, the main thing I'm concerned about is the neck. Fortunately, I haven't been scheduled to drive for a couple months since that happened, but the pain hasn't gone away.
Yeah, I understand the neck pain is the most troublesome.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that the nerves are okay, that may or may not be associated with your neck pain. And so, again, I would think seeing your physician would be a good place to start, and they may end up recommending you see a physical therapist afterward.
Okay.
Yeah,
don't actually have a physician, but I'm actually headed to a physician I've seen now and then. Right now, I had an appointment at 12:15 today, so I hope I make it.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, make sure you mention both the neck pain and your leg symptoms when you see this physician. That would be a good place to start.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Thank you for calling. And Nicole in Wausau, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. My question has to do with my 13-year-old daughter. She plays hockey at a very high level.
Ice hockey? And,
yes, ice hockey.
Okay.
And last March, she was taking a shot and then just collapsed to the ice, and she said her knee kind of popped out of the joint to the side and just went right back into joint. But it was really sore for about a week, and then twice within the last month it's happened again. We have an appointment with a sports medicine doctor next week, and I just wondered what might be causing her knee to do this and what we can expect at her appointment.
Okay.
It sounds like she's dislocating her kneecap, which is not a terribly uncommon thing in adolescent girls. It is often related to weakness in their hip muscles, weakness in their quadriceps muscles, and posture. Sort of the classic adolescent girl knock-kneed, kind of hanging on their ligaments posture. Okay. When it becomes habitual, can be a problem in sports, because when they're not thinking about it, when they're thinking about chasing a puck down to the other end, they fall into what is their habitual posture, which in this case is going to predispose her to a dislocating kneecap. So they will send her to physical therapy, and they will try to get her on a hip and quadriceps strengthening program to help build her up. But the real meat and potatoes of this is going to be getting her to change her habitual posture if she's in a posture that's predisposing her to this dislocation, because all the strengthening in the world really won't change it if her motor patterns default to something that predisposes her to this. They'll probably also give her a knee brace with a little buttress on the lateral side of her kneecap to try to hold it in place.
Okay.
So,
is this something that could affect her goal to play hockey in college?
Yes, it could.
Okay.
If she doesn't get a handle on this and she ends up with recurrent dislocations, it's going to be tough to play hockey. So she needs to get a handle on this, and it's really good that you're getting in there sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Oh, okay, thank you.
You bet. Yep,
thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let us know how those things turn out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd like to hear. We like follow-up.
Yeah, we sure do. Bob in Hartford, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a groin pull on my left side. I heard it a week ago golfing, and I haven't done much except ice and rest. Is that about it?
Well, that's definitely where you want to start, and you want to avoid activities that could potentially irritate it so the tissue has a chance to heal. So, Bob, did you know specifically when this happened?
I know exactly when it happened.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And there was no fall or slip along with this?
No, there wasn't.
Okay. All right. Any bruising up in that upper thigh area?
Not at all, no.
Okay.
I've hit a couple... some balls with my left foot turned out, and I can be able to do that, but there's pain there.
Okay.
I know those hip or those groin pulls take long to heal, I guess.
They can, especially with activities where there's some twisting and turning. Those muscles there, we rely a lot on them for stability and support. You know, again, if it's a muscle pull within the next couple of weeks, you should start feeling better with everyday activities. And if you're not, then I'd go see your physician. But the things you're doing are the right things to do, and just modify activities so you give that tissue a chance to heal.
There you go.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Stay off the driving range for sure.
At least for a little while. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
An email from Bob in Arborvitae. I'm 72 years old, a runner. Last November, I developed pain in my right heel. right where the tendon attaches to the heel, have an MRI with a finding consistent with
peritendinitis.
Peritendinitis and early tendinitis of the distal Achilles tendon without evidence of a tear. Been under a sports doctor's care for 3 months with a large series of PT stretches. How long would you guess it will take to heal? Progress has been slower than molasses in the winter.
Well, if you're only stretching, it's going to take a really long time. Stretching will not get you over the hump in this case. So you need to be on a heavy eccentric program, and that is the negative or lowering phase of an exercise. So if you think of yourself going up on your toes, the up phase is the concentric or shortening, and the down phase is the eccentric or lowering. So what we typically do for these folks is we put them over the edge of a step, we have them go up on 2 feet, and then lower themselves down with just the involved one. There's a substantial body of evidence now suggesting that those negative muscle contractions are really what helps people with tendinosis, this sort of chronic degenerative tendon condition, get over it. And it's because when the tendon tries to heal, it tries to heal with a vascular supply, which under normal circumstances sounds like it's a good thing, but in a tendon, it's actually a bad thing. So the heavy lowering or eccentric contractions helps destroy that neovascularization, and those people do better and have greater pain relief and are able to return to activity. So we start off with body weight, two feet up, 1 foot down. And then as they can tolerate that, we increase the speed and then increase the weight by putting a backpack with weights on their shoulders. So it sounds like he's in the medical system already. So getting to a physical therapist who's knowledgeable about sports can help guide him through this process.
Let's turn to Carolyn in Wautoma now. Hi, Carolyn.
Good afternoon. My question is about plantar fasciitis. Talking with friends, I mentioned something about my heel hurting on my left foot, and especially when I rest and maybe put my feet up or something, and then I go stand on it, and it's like it puts me through the ceiling. Especially in the morning after, of course, I've been resting on it all night long. I now take a can of tomato paste, which is a nice size, and I roll my foot, put that in the center of my foot on the bottom, and I just kind of roll with that. It does kind of relieve it a little bit for a little while. I can feel it when I'm walking, and then once I put my tennis shoes on and go on the treadmill and I walk around a little bit, it's better. So it isn't something that lasts all day. If I'm on my feet a lot, it may bother me, but there isn't any specific thing other than resting that really causes it to bother me. Now, the pain is in the sides of the heel, center of the heel, almost feels like there's a knot, a spot right in the center of the heel when I roll over the can with my heel.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So is that plantar fasciitis?
Oh my.
Yeah.
to a T,
textbook.
Carolyn. Yes, textbook. Yes. You could have written the chapter on plantar fasciitis. Yes, it is. Typically we recommend that people go in and see a physical therapist for this problem because it can be a bugger to get rid of. But more importantly, if you have it in one foot and not the other, we want to know why you have it in one foot and not the other, because almost everything we do with our feet is bilateral.
Right.
So we want to know if there's some underlying issue that caused you to have it in one foot and not the other, because we want to address that, not just the symptoms. Then after that, the rolling the can is good. You can also try putting some water in a small plastic bottle and freezing it and rolling that, because then you get a little ice massage at the same time.
Okay.
We recommend night splints. You can get those online. And you're exactly right. First thing in the morning is a terrible time because mm-hmm. your toes are pointed all night long and your plantar fascia shortens.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you step out of bed, you stretch that cold, shortened tissue suddenly, and it hurts like mad.
Mm-hmm.
So the night splint will help put it up in a lengthened position. And for many people, 2 to 3 months in a night splint helps with a lot of their pain. Otherwise, before you get up, you warm your foot up a little bit by pulling up and down. We teach some plantar fascia-specific strengthening, some specific stretching exercises. We look at your shoe wear to see if that's a contributor, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So kind of in a nutshell, that's where we go with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, so getting in to see a physical therapist who can kind of guide you through all those choices would be helpful.
But is this something that can be mended to the point where I won't be bothered with it, or is this something I'm looking at
you
for
bet.
The rest? Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, but that's part of the going in to see somebody so you can get to the cause of the problem so that it doesn't come back.
Thanks for calling, Carolyn. Appreciate it. Facebook question from Monique. I enjoy Zumba, but I've noticed pain on the inside of my right knee afterwards. Any suggestions for protecting my knees so I can continue dancing?
Well, the big issue would be, what are you doing during Zumba that's stressing the inside of your knee? So you kind of have to look at it backwards and ask yourself, what is it about it that's stressing it? Again, for many women, it's a postural issue where you don't have sufficient hip control. And so because your base of support, your hip muscles are not strong enough or working effectively, it translates into stress at your knee, sometimes at your feet. So we usually start by looking at your hips and making sure when you're doing something, when you're in sort of that semi-crouch squat position, that your hips, knees, and feet are all in alignment so you're not placing a stress across the inside of your knee. We look at your posture to see if there's something about your posture that's stressing the inside of your knee, shoe wear, things like that. So I'd start by taking a look at what I'm doing, making sure you've got a good tight pelvis and good strong hips firing whenever you do anything.
Evelyn and Nina, on to you now. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, thank you for this very informative program. For a number of months now, I've been experiencing a lot of pain from my right shoulder to my fingers. And when I'm sleeping at night, it gets so bad that I have to sit up and hold my arm and hand down, and then it'll relieve it somewhat. Right now, I'm experiencing like pins and needles in each of my fingers on my right hand. And there's times when I can't hold a fork or a spoon when I'm eating.
Okay.
So, Evelyn, was there an injury or an accident that kicked this off?
No, I have not had any. And the only problem, like when I'm sleeping, I like to sleep on my right side.
Okay.
And I think it could be the pressure. But during the day, I just got through slicing potatoes. And of course, I'm right-handed. And now I've got this pins and needles and weakness in my hand.
Yeah. Well, that's your nervous system talking to you. There's pressure on a nerve or nerves, most likely starting in your neck, that extend down to your hand. The fact it's been going on for a number of months, Evelyn. Have you seen anybody for this? Have you seen?
No, I haven't, because I've got other ongoing medical problems. But I also, when I'm on the computer, I get like needle pains in my neck.
Yeah. Well, Evelyn, what I would move this up your priority list a little bit, especially with the weakness. A little bit of tingling by itself is not that big of a deal, but if you're noticing weakness in that hand, you want to get it diagnosed of where is the nerve being compressed and irritated, and then get that pressure off soon, so that you don't reach a point where then it's irreversible. So, you know, again, we use the arm as kind of a barometer. The further down the pins and needles and pain goes means the more irritated the nerves are. And what you're describing to me, you know, it's just you should move this up your priority list when you see your physician.
There you go. And thank you very much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much.
Pleasure as always.
It was fun.
Oh, and you'll be back on September 19th, Monday, September. That's the third Monday of the month.
Yes,
outstanding.
It is. Okay. Look forward to it.
Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Bill Boisenault, professor at the UW Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And they'll be back on September 19th. Just taking a look at ahead to tomorrow. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk with an architect about the idea of democracy in Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture. Then at 11:45, Wisconsin author Victoria Houston will be here to talk about her latest novel in the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series. Stay with us.